What does listening have to do with dyslexia? Or attention, or social skills, sense of well-being, energy, and stamina? Everything. In 1999, I was introduced to sound therapy or auditory training for the first time. I knew then that it was something important, but I had no idea what a profound impact actively training the brain to listen would have. One of the first books I read when I was starting to learn about this kind of training was When Listening Comes Alive by Paul Madal. This is my very well-loved version. It is an outstanding resource, and today we have Paul with us to talk about the power of listening in changing dyslexia and other learning challenges. This is LD Expert Live. Welcome to the LD Expert Podcast, your place for answers and solutions for dyslexia, learning, and attention challenges. I'm your host, Jill Stowell, founder of Stowell Learning Centers, and author of a brand new book, Take the Stone Out of the Shoe, a must-have guide to understanding, supporting, and correcting dyslexia, learning, and attention challenges. This book will help you understand why some bright children and teens have more difficulty than expected in school. It provides simple, practical tools for supporting struggling students at home and in the classroom. Most importantly, it presents real solutions and the science behind them. Our guest today is Paul Madal. Born in France, Paul studied at the University of Paris-Sorbonne while training with Dr. Alfred Tomatis, and graduated in psychology in 1972. After years practicing and teaching the Tomatis listening training work in Europe and South Africa, Paul came to Toronto, Ontario, Canada in 1978 and founded the Listening Center. Since then, Paul has been involved in establishing numerous listening training clinics in the U.S. and Mexico. Paul has written numerous articles on subjects related to the educational and therapeutic value of music, voice, and listening training with children with developmental and learning problems. Paul's book, When Listening Comes Alive, first published in 1993, has been translated into 10 languages. The ebook version is available on the Listening Center website. Norman Doidge, MD, has written an engaging portrayal of Paul and a detailed explanation of his work at the Listening Center in his book, The Brain's Way of Healing. Welcome, Paul. It's so nice to have you.
Good morning. Welcome. Thank you very much.
Norman Doidge's book, The Brain's Way of Healing, is an incredible book, and I was so excited to see that he included your work in it. You have been one of my heroes in the field for a very long time, so I was excited to see that. Let's start by talking about the Listening Center. Just talk about what you do there.
Well, the Listening Center is a clinical facility that started, as you said in your introduction, in 1978. I come from France with Dr. Tomatis to develop what was going to be the first listening training facility in North America. It is in Toronto, and it has been in practice, non-interrupted, since that time. That means 42 years now. And despite of COVID, we are still continuing to work all by home program and using Zoom and some equipment that we are sending to people who need to have the program. The Listening Center receive children and adults with all kind of difficulties, going from communication, language, and learning issue, all related, and that's what the name of listening center, all related to the function of listening. Mm-hmm. Our work is about listening, is about improving listening. And as a result, many of the issues we are going to talk about are improved. That is the key work of the listening center.
And we are going to really dig into that whole issue of using listening to improve learning challenges. Before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about what it's like to have a learning disability. You know, parents and teachers definitely empathize and hurt for their kids, but if you haven't struggled yourself, you don't really know what it's like. And I know, Paul, you had dyslexia. What is it like to have a learning disability?
Well, I have to adjust a little bit. I still have dyslexia, but I made it an asset and not a liability. First of all, I made it my work, which is not a small thing. When you say that I studied psychology in Sorbonne, it's true. But my first university is having to live a life with a learning disability, with a difficulty to read, and more than that, but we are going to talk about that, until I was 18 years old, which means I think gave me enough, you know, 18 years old, we are already basically an adult. And we remember, it's not like I was 4 years old when something happened, and well, we don't remember very much. 18 years old, we remember. Mm-hmm. And that has permitted me to understand not only understand what learning disability is from the books, from what I learned, and from my clinical experience, but understand it from within and use this understanding from within to help people, particularly the kids and adolescents that have been, you know, through my life, through my help, that have helped all along. And particularly, you know, when I'm saying I'm working with children, we are working with children with learning, etc. Most of my work, I have to say, I would say 70 to 80% of my work all my life has been to work with their parents in order for them to understand their child. Because what I remember from being learning disabled is that I was surrounded by people who really didn't understand, and those who thought they understood didn't really understand the core of the problem. They understood the symptom. They understood, oh, it looks like, I'm talking about people, you know, I was in France. We didn't talk about speech pathologists or occupational therapists. Or we talked about orthophonists, but basically doing the same work. Mm-hmm. But they understood the problem through the symptoms. What is important to understand is that a problem is the way you experience it. I just give you an example. The life of a child who has a learning disability is to be told that he has a learning disability in different ways. Could do better, you know, the report card saying this and saying that, sending it to the parents. That was the way it was done and still done in many places, who are kind of reinforcing what the teachers say, and with more effort would do better and all those things. Well, what one thing that I want to say is that the person who lives this learning disability doesn't have to be told that he has it. He knows. He is part of it. He is within it. And having to be told again and again something you know, it's, to say the least, annoying, frustrating, or whatever you want to call it, which is going to make you react in a certain way. And then there are two levels that I can see, two two phases that I can see in the development of the child is a child before, I would say, the preteen or the teenage, which means the younger child, and the teenager, the adolescent. The problem is different before and after. There is a moment around, depending, that around 12 to 14 years old, where we have to develop our personality. Personality meaning, in fact, our persona, which is our mask, which is the belief of who you are in order to operate in life. This is what I am. Which means that before that time, people tell you, okay, you don't know how to read, you have to learn how to read, you have to go to school, you're fine, and you follow. At that time, you say, well, I have to live with who I am. And if school is not really able to, well, that is the way you start turning things around. I am what I am. And school doesn't seem to like what I am. Well, goodbye school. Or not goodbye school, but trying to accommodate with something that deep down you are not accepting. Which means that there is, you know, from a learning problem, you start developing what I would call an existential problem. You have to live with yourself in a situation where you feel that people around you think they understand you, but they don't really understand you. They understand your problem. They don't understand the person. They don't understand what it is to receive an information distorted. They don't understand how to that in your mind you have much more to talk about than what comes out either orally for some people or for most people with learning disability in writing. It happens that following my quote-unquote recovery, I started becoming a traveler and to teach this work, to spread this work, which I really believe very much about, as you will see, all over the world. But in order to do that, I had to learn languages. I had to learn English. Later on, I had to learn Spanish. Every time I found myself in another language, I went back to the memories of my old learning disability. That's why I have defined being learning disabled, being a foreigner, but a foreigner in your own language. And when you, but the difference is that when you go and learn another language, at least you can fall back to your own language when you are tired of listening to people speaking a language that you don't really understand, which requires so much effort. You can go back to your own language. The problem of someone with a learning disability, which, by the way, has a lot to do with language at some level. Okay, that we can talk more about that when we talk about listening and language. But what happened is that you do not have the ability to fall back to a previous life because of communication, of decent, of harmonious communication, which means that you start starting to have doubt about yourself. You start having this distortion of reception of information, this distorted way of expressing before becomes, particularly with adolescents, the way you are. You are a foreigner within yourself. You don't really know who you are anymore. And that's what I call, again, the existential issue of learning disabled. I look at it much more as something within yourself than learning at school, if you want.
Right. You know, when you said it's kind of like you're a foreigner in your own language, when I went to France and spent some time in Paris, by the end of the day, I kind of felt, I felt tired, you know, trying to listen to a language that I didn't really understand. And I thought, wow, I wonder if this is what our students feel like, you know, day after day as they try to process the information, but they just can't get it clearly and accurately enough.
It's exactly what they do for many of them. Yeah. And we have to understand that if we really want to communicate with them at the deepest level.
Mm-hmm. And so tell us a little bit. You said, you had to learn some other languages. You overcame the learning disability part of dyslexia. Tell us about your journey to change that. Okay. How did that change for you?
Well, first of all, I was struggling at school so much that I kind of become a dropout. I didn't go to school anymore. They were trying to, my school, we're talking about the 60s and we're talking about the south of France, a small town. They're trying to accommodate me. I had repeated three grades already. I was getting older than all the kids in the classroom. I didn't fit anymore, which means that I started not to go to school. And it just happened that I was interested in art, always been, and I hope always will be, visual art. And the only place around the town I was living, which was into art, was a monastery. It just happened that monks are very much, at least of this monastery, were into art. And I was going there. It was just a bike hike from my home, like about I could go by bicycle, and I'm doing this, looking at them working on different glass making, different art. I met a monk who I start talking, and we knew that I had difficulty at school. In fact, he knew a little bit my family. And one day, this monk arrived at our house and say, there is a doctor in the monastery who is working with us, and gave us a lecture on the work that he's doing in Paris. And it has to do with dyslexia and learning disability. And what he described is very much who you are. We could arrange that you meet him. And that's where I met Dr. Tomatis, which means that it was not in a clinic or in any place like that. I met him in a monastery, in the alley of a monastery. He did some testing with me, or someone, one monk that he had trained, test my ears, which surprised me, because if one thing I thought was working well with me was my hearing. I realized later that I might have been wrong about that, that you can have a difficulty with your ear while hearing perfectly well, which is what we call listening. That was my first introduction to the person who developed, who is really was the grandfather of all the listening training program, auditory training, and so on, that I met directly, and who told me that in fact many of the difficulty I had could be improved as long as I could come to spend some time in his clinic in Paris, which I did. I spent most of the summer of the 1967, in fact, in Paris, doing a round of program, an intensive round, very much like we do now, of 3 or 4 weeks in his clinic, then going to, in fact, he advised me to go to England to shape up my English, which I needed to have as a second language in the French curriculum, and back in August to do the second intensive, and then arranged to put me in a residential, in a boarding school close to Paris. Then I could, during the weekend, commute and continue to do reinforcement of my program while continuing reintegrating the school system. Mm-hmm. And 2 years later, I successfully passed the baccalaureate, which is the end of the high school curriculum in France, and the open door to university. And from there, the choice of going to psychology in order to continue this work. That was my introduction to this work.
Right. And
what I can say about it, which is very important, which I learned, and I used very often, is that the first question I asked to Tomatis when he told me, "I can help you," I asked him, "Is it going to change my dreams? In a way, are you going to change me?" And he told me, "No, you're going to be you, but you're going to be you able to operate." And it's exactly what I am. I've not changed deep down. I'm the person I always wanted to be, except that I can be what I wanted to be. At the time,
wow. That is so important. You know, I have had students say that as well. Who am I going to be when I can read? Who will I be? Will I really still be myself?
Exactly. Exactly. It's a very important point that has to be understood, particularly with those who have worked very, very hard to develop this personality, who have arrived to the conclusion that this is who I am. I can be without reading. I can be without going to school. Well, you are going to have to help them to reframe that, but do not be surprised that you get a little bit of a resistance. It's part of it. It's part of the process.
Right.
You are going to be who you want to be without being different. That is a message we want to send to these people.
That's huge. So I was getting ready to ask you, and that's a piece of it, with your personal experience with dyslexia and the work that you do at the Listening Center, what would you want children and parents to understand about listening and learning issues?
First of all, I would like to say what we mean by listening, because sometimes it needs a little bit of, I think, a definition or a clarification. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As I said, I was hearing perfectly well. I loved music. I could even sing in tune. I could not remember lyrics. But I couldn't read very well, which means I was a little bit stuck to be part of a group, for example. But I could not play music with instrument because of coordination issue. My right and left hand didn't communicate with each other very well, which means that all my attempt to play guitar and things like that in order to be a teenager of the time, we were in the 60s, didn't work out very well. And then later on in life, I become busy, doing other things, and I kind of forgot that part until now. But what I want parents to know is that learning disability is the academic, the school issue is the end of a long line of issues which have to be improved before you really you start changing that. We talk about development. I think the learning disability, I really strongly believe that it's a developmental issue which start early on. We don't, it depends, of course, what kind of person, but very often we know that there is language issues, etc. Now, one thing that I want to say, I'll go back to my first idea, is to tell you what listening is. Listening is the ability to pick up, it's a bit like the tongue of a frog, pick up what you want, the information you want, and as a result, leave aside, move, protect yourself from the information you don't want. What one of the way I, you know, playing with paradox, I define listening, poor listening, is hearing too much, hearing what you need and hearing also what you do not need. And what you do not need might be louder or more interesting or whatever. and basically dwarfs or melts the message that you want to receive. That's what happened very often in the classroom. Now, there are other words to talk about those kind of things and perhaps other way of explaining it, ADD, ADHD, auditory processing disorder, and all those words which at the time didn't exist. And the concept of listening, ability to pick up what you want, protect yourself, what you do not, is really at the core of the work we are doing. And using sound, that was the great, I would say, insight of Dr. Tomatis, who was himself a ear, nose, and throat specialist, understood the ear, understood the mechanism of how the sound information goes from the ear through the brain, how to improve that ability of facilitating the work of the brain to process the information that it receives. Another dimension of the work of Tomatis, which goes beyond auditory processing and which is very important, is that he always mentioned the fact that the ear is not only for receiving sound, but the ear is also the system which permits us to analyze movement, the movement of body in space, and together with the proprioceptive system, the movement of the hand, the movement of the finger, the movement of the eyes, which are so important in reading and, of course, writing, which means that in Tomatis thinking, in the thinking of the work that we are doing at the Listening Center, when we think in terms of listening, we think in terms of information, facilitating the brain job in receiving information coming from sound, but also coming from the body, from the movement of the body. This is very important to understand written language. Written language is a translation of sound into images and reading and body movement, writing.
Absolutely. It is just so fascinating to me how everything is so connected. And I just want to emphasize for people watching, because if you haven't heard this frequently, there may be a little confusion, but listening is not the same as hearing. As Paul said, he could hear perfectly. The ears hear, but listening is a brain function. And so if the brain isn't perceiving that information clearly and crisply, then you're going to be responding to a confusing message. Exactly. And I love that, you know, there is that connection in the ear with the vestibular system. So the system of movement, yes. Also, yeah.
But when you look at listening, but first of all, there is now more than before. We talk more and more about auditory processing. The work of, Mezernik and Talal talk about temporal processing, which means it takes time to process an information. And if you process the information too slow, you are going to hear the information distorted, which means that, you know, fast forward is a technique using computer technology to speed up the way or to modify the content of phonemes in order to make your brain receiving them better. Well, the work of Tomatis has been to understand that the ear, within the ear, there is a system in the middle ear, which is known usually as a passage and a transformation of sound wave, air wave, into fluid movement to be picked up by the inner ear and sent to the brain. But what Tomatis observed is that those little ossicles of the middle ear, not only do they move, but they are pulled and pushed and pulled, which means that they are basically manipulated by two little muscles, the stapedius muscle and the armor muscle called the tensor tympani. These two muscles have a role in its understanding of how the ear is more active than we think, very, very much like the eyes, which has vision that I will call, which correspond to hearing, and the ocular system, which is a movement of the eyes in order to receive, to follow what you want to see. Well, imagine that the ear has also a system in the middle ear, which is basically the ocular system of hearing. And that is with sound stimulation administered in a certain way, we are trying to apply in order to improve listening. Mm-hmm. Listening function. That is the core of the work that we are trying to do. Use sound as a way to improve this active ability of the ear to facilitate the work, the processing job of the brain.
And it is amazing how well it works. I know when I first started to explore auditory processing and sound therapy as a way to improve dyslexia and other learning challenges back in 1999, 2000, I was astonished by the changes that we were seeing through listening training. Well, now it's a tool that we don't want to work without. It's just has such a profound impact.
And yes, so go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, and then we're going to cut over and check in with our viewers.
Okay, and it's spreading. I mean, there is several approaches now, which more or less directly look at learning disability from the point of view of what the ear contributes. What we have to understand is that written work is secondary to the sound of language, to the sound of word. Is that the writing is very recent. The process of writing is considering the development of humankind. Writing is very, very, very recent. We are asking the brain to do something which is not really natural. Hearing and language is natural. We have that ability, want it or not. If everything works well when we are born, we are going to speak. Animals are not, we are going to speak. We are lucky, we have that hardwired. Reading is more complicated. Reading is a translation. It's like going to another country and learn the other language. Now, children have such an incredible ability, plasticity, that they do it in a way that we think seems to be natural. But it's not that natural. But what I want to say is that every sound, every written sign is a translation of a sound, which means that, want it or not, you have to go through the ear. If you can make it sound clearer to your brain, the eyes is going to have a much, much easier time to know what the translation is, which means that the written word, the letters are. That is what a big part why listening, improving listening, is so efficient in helping people with reading and writing problems. And for me, I mean, I'm born with it, professionally speaking, which means that it's obvious, but it's not obvious for everybody.
Right. This is LD Expert Live. I'm Jill Stoll, founder of Stoll Learning Centers, and we've been talking with Paul Madal, author and founder of the Listening Center in Toronto, Canada, about overcoming dyslexia and learning challenges through listening training. Well, we started kind of down the road of talking about listening training. There are a number of terms used for it: auditory training, sound therapy, sound stimulation. Can you just give us a little primer on this kind of training?
Okay. Well, listening training, auditory training, I prefer personally listening because it's really more precise in my mind, at least, than auditory training. But sound stimulation, it's also important because we are using, it's really an auditory or listening training with sound stimulation. We use sound stimulation to develop this function, this active function of the middle ear that we call listening, this working on those little muscles, by which means that we take music, which we use it as a material, a sound material, and we modify it through what we call filters, auditory sound filters, and we pass them through canals which permit us to exercise the function of listening, which means that we, because we are dealing with muscle, we you know how you do to train a muscle, you create a tension, release, well, we can do the same thing with sound. We know that sound richer in lower frequency produce kind of a release. That is what you are doing when you are not listening, you know, when you're thinking about something else, you're still hearing things around you, but your muscles are kind of relaxed. And then up, something pick up your attention. It's a little bit like the rabbit, whoop, his idea, the bunny, you know, the ears goes up, the ear perk up. Well, or here perk up in the middle ear, it's more discreet than the rabbit or the dog or the cat. And we listen. Well, this function of listen, meaning that there is tension of the muscles, and then when you're not interested anymore, release tension, release tension. If this function is not, if those muscles are not doing their job as well as they should, you are not going to maintain your listening long enough, or you are going to hear with distortion, or you are going to hear too slow. I mean, all those type of auditory processing or listening problems that we know, which means that our work is to create this pull, push, pull, push with this exercising of those muscles through sound stimulation. Now, we do this through a program which, using music most of the time, which goes from listening, you just what we call passive listening, you just receive information, you can do something else, you can play, you can draw, you can do puzzles, and then that start opening you here. When and this opening, as you were mentioning before, Jill, goes relatively fast. But that is only the beginning of the work. And I insist on that because many people are satisfied with that part. Oh, now that the ear are open, everything is going to go well. And then a month later, oh, but it's not going as well as we wanted. Well, it is because when you start improving something, you have to find a way to keep reinforcing it, reinforcing the improvement. And the beauty of the way we are made up is that we have a system which permit to stimulate, develop, reinforce our listening. What is this system? Well, this system is our voice. It's like learning a language. The more I speak it, the more I listen to it. I start listening to it, then I continue to speak it, then I reinforce, and the loop, you know, the circle get bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's the way you improve listening, which means that there is a second phase in the work we do, which is extremely important, and that many people in auditory training kind of forget because it's a little bit more complicated than just listening to music, is the voice work. You have a microphone and you hear in real time your voice modified through the device which modifies the music. Well, it and transmit your voice to this system of push, pull, push, pull, push, pull, in order to develop your self-listening. And this self-listening is going to be going to ensure the long-term effect of the program. As a clinician, what interests me is not just a change. A pill can change you. But as soon as you stop taking the pill, you're back to where you were. I want the change to maintain. The beauty is that we have a system which is our voice, or a voice when we speak, or a voice when we read, which permits to maintain, reinforce, and permit you little by little to get out or to get less tributary, less enslaved by your learning disability. That is what I've done, I have to say. my treatment with Tomatis, my therapy at the time, my training, took about a summertime plus perhaps 1 year of reinforcement. But very early on, Tomatis told me, if you want to really move on, and do whatever you want, you have to work on your voice. And the way Tomatis was suggesting, and I still do that, to work on the voice is reading out loud. Mm-hmm. And in our work, we go in great lengths, particularly since we work with Zoom, to make the reading out loud as fun and interesting as possible. We look at a book like a kind of a box in which, bam, a story is going to come out. And your job is to make this story come alive as interesting, as fun as possible. And children have imagination, and they can, if you know how to approach them, they can do that. They can read to the dogs. They can read to the little brothers. They can, but read becomes, the word reading, very often for someone with dyslexia, create a mental block. I don't know how to read. It's like someone who say, I don't know how to sing. Well, everybody knows how to sing. Doesn't mean that they know how to sing well. But with that, in singing, it doesn't mean well. It means, do you know how to put two notes together? Everybody knows how to do that, even if they sing out of tune. No? Reading is the same thing. But forget about the visual aspect of reading. The visual aspect, think about it as it's secondary to listening to your voice telling a story. Tell a story, and it just happened, just like this, that this story is in something which looks like a page, and your job is to get this story to come alive. If you arrive to switch that around, you are going to make a child not listen, not read well, but come out with the words which are on the page. That is a starting point. And if you can make that fun, and that is a job of the educator, if you can make something fun, you are touching the fiber, you are touching what children need to learn without real effort. Now, it doesn't mean that it's going to be effortless, but it's going to be fun, which means the work we do during the active phase of the program is to make this reading fun. And then following the program, that is what I call the neuroplastic aspect of our work, is to continue to read out loud, which is an exercise that I recommend people who have done this program or to the parent to children who have not done this program. There is always a possibility to read out loud. And in order to make it more, to make it stronger, to make it more effective, to make it more working more on the ear, you put your right hand as if it was a microphone in front of your mouth, like if you wanted to boomerang the information from your hand to your ear, from your right hand to your right ear. Why the right ear? Because it is the ear connected more specifically with the language center of the brain, which means that you are creating a stronger link between the voice, the ear, the brain, the voice, the ear, the brain, and you improve listening and as a result reading and as a result all those mechanisms underlying the learning process. I assure you, it works. The only time it doesn't work is when children are forced to do it. They hate reading. And if you take the approach of making it a task, a job, an exercise, you kill its effectiveness. It has to be done in the beginning, like talking with moving your hand in front of your mouth, like Italians do and French do. And you have to find fun ways to do it, but it's really a fantastic exercise. It taught me to, it helped me not only with English, but with French, but with English, and later in life with Spanish. I learned so much by putting my words into my mouth, into my ear, into my brain. This is the best exercise I can recommend people to do. if the voice is not good, if the child, try to really work on the quality of the voice. In fact, you better deal with a voice teacher than with someone interested in a voice. It's a quality of the projection of the voice. Putting the right hand in front of the mouth automatically pull the sound out of the mouth. It mm-hmm. makes the sound come out of the mouth easier. And the more the sound comes out of the mouth, produced through the lips, through the front part of the mouth, the more defined, clear, rich in color and timbre it's going to be, the more stimulating it's going to be for the ear and for the brain.
Wow. You just said so many amazing things in there. You know, when you said that if the child, it kind of has a flat voice and they're kind of mumbling. One of the things that we do sometimes with kids is to have them create a comparison. And it's really fun and funny to do for them, as opposed to having them have to repeat something over and over because they need to do it better. Sometimes we'll take like a paragraph and we'll say, okay, we're going to read this just like a robot. And so they have to read it as boring as they can. And then we say, okay, now let's do it like an announcer, like we're really awesome. And by giving them that contrast, they start to be able to play with their voice and have fun. And I encourage everybody to try this hand mic. This is really interesting. When you put your right hand up there, it does then amplify that voice to your right ear. Really interesting.
One thing that we're working a lot with the children who have difficulty with reading is to try to pull out of them, I would call it the actor within. Many, many children, it's very rare not to find a child who somewhere would like to be an actor. Take that, take advantage of that. That's what actors do. They have the text somewhere, sometimes even in front of their eyes, or presenters, and they make it sound like it's coming just out of the mind, like totally improvised. This is what we have to convey. They will do better in acting school than perhaps at school.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They have difficulty with reading and writing.
Right. And then, as you said, when we can get the voice to be really activated, it becomes an ongoing stimulus for our auditory system
and for our brain, yeah.
Which keeps us, you know, keeps us going, keeps us energized, because, you know, sound also energizes the brain.
Absolutely. Sound is transformed into neural impulse, and as you know, a neural impulse is electricity, is biochemical electricity. It's really a charge to the brain. Tomatis was talking about the charging effect of sound. Mm-hmm. That's why music therapy works. That's why music has so read Oliver Sack and what he was able to do with people with neurological problems like half of a brain or people who had tumors. And music can do fantastic things. It's also one of the beauty of working with listening is that we can take full advantage of the music. How many children don't like music? All autistic children that I know, and I work with many, many of them, love music. There you have the entry. You have a passport to get into them and start communicating. Use mm-hmm. music, use sound.
Absolutely. This is LD Expert Live. I'm Jill Stoll, and we're speaking with Paul Madal, founder and director of the Listening Center in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. This has been an incredible discussion. I'm also just thrilled that you were able to be here. What last words of encouragement do you have for our viewers today, Paul?
Well, I think our work is several things, but one of them is Our job is to turn a liability into an asset, because not only I think having been able to improve an issue, being able to improve an issue, such a learning disability, make you more than what you would have been if you wouldn't have that disability. You have learned, first of all, you have learned to work harder to get what you need. That is something that you are going to keep. You are not going to lose that part. It's just going to be easier. Another thing I want to say is that there is no age. Of course, things go a little bit faster and easier at a younger age. But in fact, I like to work with adolescents because you can really work with them and not necessarily the parents, which means that you, when you know how to take them and get their attention, you can make them themselves becoming proactive about working. Now, it doesn't always work as nicely as I'm explaining it, but that is a goal. And when you can obtain that, you are ahead of the game. Being learning disabled is having a brain which may work a little bit different from someone else. Well, this, I think, is, again, as I was saying before, an asset. In Quebec, they have an expression who say, vive la différence. Good to be different. Look at all the people who have been successful in the creative world, in the world of business, in the world of technology, having overcome a learning disability. It's huge. It's huge. Why? Yes. Because they have, it's like the left-handed golfer, or not golfer, tennis man. He has something that others do not have and give him an edge. I think, look at me. I made my life, and I think it has been quite a successful one and still is, working not only having had a learning disability, but working, helping people overcome that. And that is what children should be told, and parents should know about the child. It looks like an obstacle. It is certainly looks like a big obstacle during the school years, but there is life behind school. And keep that in mind.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Paul. I encourage everyone to get a copy of Paul's book, When Listening Comes Alive. I've found it to be a very valuable reference and resource. This is LD Expert Live, your place for answers and solutions for learning disabilities, dyslexia, and auditory and attention challenges. Thank you again, Paul, for sharing with us and for the incredible contributions that you have made to the fields of auditory processing, listening, and learning.